Good afternoon, and welcome to Backtracks in Time. I'm Jack Sensabaugh, and today my guest is David Dorpfeld, Greene County historian. I've been trying to get Dave on the show for a few months now, and thanks to some fortunate scheduling, it finally worked out. So welcome, David.
Thank you.
Tell us, how long have you been county historian for Greene
County? I've been county historian for 9 years, and I am the fourth Greene County historian. First one started in the 1920s, and so we have a long tenure, and I hope I can continue that.
Hopefully, yes. So how did you wind up being a historian? You always had a love of local history?
Yes, I have, and I was born in Greene County, and I've been a 40-year member of the Greene County Historical Society, and was very involved over the years. I've been the treasurer for, right now, I think 38 years. And so, when the job came open, I had happened to be retired for 3 years, and I made an application. I was accepted.
Now, what are some of the duties? I don't think some of our listeners realize how much is involved.
I'll talk about that a bit.
Yeah, sure.
There's nothing in law. However, the state historian's office has laid out some responsibilities for the county historian. The first one I'd like to talk about a bit is research and writing. I've taken that very seriously. Over the 9 years I have been county historian, I have written over 400 columns for the local newspapers. I think they've been well received. As a matter of fact, occasionally I miss a week, and I have people say, "Where was your column last week?" So
that's a loyal audience.
I think
notice.
People seem to enjoy that. So that's a responsibility of a county historian, to do research and writing. Along those lines, my wife and I also co-authored a book a couple years ago called Legendary Locals of Greene County. It was about people who had made their mark either on Greene County or were born there and went on to achieve a number of notable things. And that seems to have been well received. You know, that's one of my responsibilities. Another responsibility is to promote advocacy for things that promote history. And I've tried to do that in a number of ways. We have a house in Athens that was in need of repair, the 1706 Van Loon House, which is the oldest house in Athens.
Yeah, I know just where it
is.
And
recently I was able to reach out to Greene Correctional Facility, and we've got the folks, some of the inmates there, painted the facility. It looks beautiful now. That's another responsibility of the county historian. Perhaps, I guess maybe the third responsibility is to promote activities which include anniversaries. And over the years, we've had one in Hunter, Lexington, Athens, and this year, for the most part, was Coxsackie, and we had a lot of events there. You know, these are things. Also, we've done, as county historian, I've been co-chair from 2001 through 2005, commemorating the 150th anniversary of the Civil War.
Oh,
and
right.
We did, every year we did a trip. We went to Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia, visiting sites of the Civil War. We did lectures. We had a commemoration every year in a different town, starting in Catskill, commemorating the Civil War. So that's over. That was a long commemoration, but also a very good one. And we're glad that we were able to bring something to the folks of Greene County.
Oh, yes. That's wonderful. Think of the Civil War. I did see the Gettysburg battlefield one time.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. I took the horseback tour.
Oh, yes, I've
cousin.
Heard of it. Yeah,
yeah, that was kind of nice.
I talked to someone that was doing that.
Yeah.
Another responsibility that I skipped over was teaching and providing public presentations.
Okay.
And the fourth and seventh grade local history curriculum includes local history. Now, I've done a little bit of that, but the Greene County Historical Society has people that go into the classrooms and teach local history to the children. And we also bring them on site to the Bronx Museum to do do talks there. And also, from my own perspective, I do talks to groups when I'm asked to do that. Like I've talked in the last year, the DAR, the Adult Learning Institute, and also local history groups, if they'd like to have a talk on local history. So that's another thing I do. I've also, early on in my tenure, I worked out an agreement with the county. When the county comes across anything of historical value, like an artifact, we have an agreement that those will reside with the Greene County Historical Society. And I worked with the county attorney to work out that kind of an agreement. So at least we know they're in a safe place.
Right.
I wanted to say, too, along those lines, there are 62 county historians, and then there's probably another 1,500 municipal historians, like probably Hudson has one, Catskill has one. Almost every municipality should have a historian. That's an important thing. I don't consider myself as a supervisor of them, but I try to work with those folks over time. They often come to me for advice, and I try to help them whenever I can.
That's great. I know I've tried to reach out. Earlier this year, I tried to reach out to some of them by email and phone calls to try to be possible guests on the show. I'm going to have to send out some more messages.
They're a great group. And I want to say we have a wonderful group in Greene County. We have some very hardworking municipal historians, and I talk to them on a regular basis. It's a great group. We're trying to do everything we can to interest the local populace in history.
Well, that's great. I like to hear the fact that there's a local history curriculum in the schools now. I didn't have that 30 years ago, given the age there a little bit. Yeah, I think the kids have to, kids, like I said, 4 and 7, so it's about 9, 12 years old, something like that, need to know the background of where they live. Yes. It gives them more appreciation for it.
Like, for instance, with the fourth graders, we bring them over, at least with Coxsackie, Athens, and some of the other local schools. We bring them over to the Bronk House, and we make a presentation, and we try to teach them about colonial life and what it was like.
Yeah.
So the children seem to, they really enjoy that.
Oh, good. Especially as we get more technological.
Right.
I think the kids are more tech savvy than I am.
I know. That's true.
That doesn't say much either. Yeah. Now, a town that's celebrating a major anniversary this year is Coxsackie, where you live.
Yes, Coxsackie, and I've been very involved in that. And if you give me a chance, maybe I could talk a little bit about that.
All right, go right ahead.
We've had a number of events celebrating the 150th anniversary of the village of Coxsackie. We had a talk back on June 18th on the history, which is well done. And we will, we're going to do an encore of that presentation by Michael Rausch, who is the town historian. That will be October 5th at the Vetter Library in Coxsackie. He's going to redo that presentation, which was good. On July 25th, we had an open house. We have 7 churches in Coxsackie, and they all opened their doors so that folks could learn about the history of these denominations. And it was a great event. And I think, most of all, I think the folks in those churches were thrilled to be able to tell people about their faith and the history, most of all, the history of those denominations in Coxsackie. Then August 5th, we had the Riverside Festival, which goes on every year.
Yes. It's,
the Athens has one, and so does Coxsackie. And we had a big booth there showing historic pictures of downtown Coxsackie, which was well received.
Yeah, I saw that because I went to the festival. Yeah.
Right. And then another event which was extremely well received, I think we probably had between 50 and 100 people. We did a tour of the old Mansion Street Cemetery, which is one of the oldest cemeteries in Coxsackie. Oh, and we had a person there, actually our curator from the Bronk Museum, did a walking tour and talked a little bit about the different styles of monuments and the different people that were buried there. That's a cemetery which is crying out for some tender, loving care. I think next year there's a group of us are going to try to restore some of the stones there and try to get that so it's presentable. It's been, although the village takes care of the cemetery over the years, it's fallen into a bit of disrepair. And then on August 19th, we had a tavern night at the Bronc Museum. Again, well-received. We sold out the tickets. Essentially, it was commemorating or celebrating the 400th anniversary of Peter Bronc, who built the Bronc House in 1663. And he owned a tavern in Albany. We know that. That's well-documented. So we had a few tavern snacks as well as something we called Peter Bronc beer. And people went away very happy. And I think next year we might try to expand that and get a few more people. We were only able to accommodate about 70 that night.
Okay.
And then for me, the big thing was last weekend, September 9th, we had a history walk of downtown Coxsackie.
Okay.
And we had over a dozen reenactors. And these folks, I guess I could use posed as historic people, starting out with Mr. Reed, who started the whole downtown Coxsackie, bought the land, built a place where he was shipping. And it just grew from there, okay? That started about 1792. And then it just went from there. The village grew, and so that was a tremendous a success. We had literally hundreds of people, and we had over 100 children from 7th grade that came down and did the tour, that walked down from the Coxsackie School.
Super.
So we had costume characters that told stories, and it was just a wonderful event. And people are saying, are you going to do it next year? It was a lot of work. And I want to say, I want to recognize Betty Cure, who really organized that walk. It was a lot of work, and it just came out beautifully. So that's past. We have a number of other events coming up at the Bronc Museum. I could talk about those if you'd like me to.
Sure.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, on October 5th at 7 o'clock, we're going to have another education program on the history of Coxsackie. Michael Roush, the town historian, we're going to call it an encore presentation for those that have seen it, but it was well received when he gave it. Then on the 21st of October, the Onrust will be at the Coxsackie Landing. Now, that was a ship, not like the Half Moon, but it was built here after the Dutch arrived, and this is a reconstruction of a ship which was built in New York shortly after the beginning of the 17th century. So they will be in Coxsackie. I'm not sure the time right now, and maybe I can give you that information later on.
Okay, sure.
Then on November 9th, we have another education program on the World War I history in Greene County. Now, as most people know, this is the 100th anniversary of the United States entering World War I. And Dick Muggio, a retired teacher, will talk about that. And then on the 12th, November 12th, we're going to have John Hamm again. Now, John Hamm is a well-respected writer on regional railroads, and he's just come out with a new book on which will feature the train stations, train stops from New Jersey to Buffalo. I'm sure, knowing John's former work, it will be outstanding. Probably his most interesting work so far has been 100 Years on Resort Ridge, which focuses on all the hotels on the mountaintop that existed at one time.
So the Mountain House, Catskill, Laurel House, all that.
And even a lot of smaller ones, yeah.
Yeah, all the boarding houses. I know like the Catskill and Terranceville Railroad served a lot of those. John is a good one to probably get on the show. I'm just making a side note to myself here, because
I'm a big
railroad buff. Yeah. So that's how I got into local history.
He's great. Yeah, you might want to make a note of that, the 12th of November. And then on the 18th, we have an annual event at the Bronc House, which is called the Chili Willy, Chili Willy Winter's Eve Tours. That's a tongue twister.
It sure is.
But essentially, our curator, Shelby Matthijs, will talk about how Christmas was celebrated in the past, particularly 17th and 18th century. And it's a very popular event. And but like I say, the museum is closed at that point, so it is a little chilly. We need to dress warmly for that
right,
one.
Right.
So we have a number of things. I don't know. I thought we had one other event, which I didn't mention, but that kind of summarizes what we have coming up. So, I'm sorry. Can I mention one more, Jack?
Oh, yes.
Okay, October 28th, we have an event called A Great Sorrow. And this is, again, presented by our capable curator, Shelby Matthijs. And it's all about an early American funeral. In other words, how did they do things back 200, 300 years ago? How were those kind of, and, you know, it's fascinating. And so our curator will present that. What we do today when people pass is something which has sort of evolved over the years. Things have changed. I mean, even 100 years ago, we still had wakes in the home.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll talk about that a bit. Yeah. I mean, now we've moved on to funeral homes, but funerals were not always done that way. And Shelby does a fascinating presentation on that, and the event is called A Great Sorrow, and that's presented on October 28th, so at 4:30 and 5:30. So
super
good.
Yeah, wow. Now to backtrack a little bit here, yes, that's a play on the set. I couldn't help that one. It just came to me, and I had my listeners know I have a corny sense of humor. Yeah. I'm proud of it, thanks to Dad. Anyway, yeah, you know, some of the things that have gone on, like the cemetery, for example, the cemetery
right.
walk. Now, are there any notable people buried in there? I live right next, literally across from the Thompson Street Cemetery in Catskill.
Right.
And I know the Beach family is in there, the Cole family. Does Coxsackie have anybody?
We have the Bronc family. Several members of the Bronc family are
that's
buried
sort of obvious.
In that cemetery. Also, Dr. Ely. Dr. Ely was a surgeon in the War of 1812. He was the first physician in Coxsackie. He helped found the Albany Medical Association, a rich history there. We have a couple of congressmen, former congressmen. Matter of fact, Dr. Ely is one of them. We have quite a few notable people. I don't know that we can compete with the Thompson Street Cemetery, but I'm glad you brought that up. Huh. I heard from a friend of mine. Apparently, they're doing something in Catskill, some kind of evening program that they're going to do on Main Street. And he's presented a proposal to them to do a cemetery walk in the Thompson Street Cemetery, where he will highlight some of the famous people that were buried
wonderful.
There, including Thomas Cole and Charles Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds like an interesting event,
yeah.
And I'm kind of looking forward to that. You know, it's interesting, cemeteries, it's sad, but, you know, once a certain period of time goes by, a lot of these old cemeteries become somewhat semi-abandoned.
Yeah.
The municipalities are supposed to take them over. That doesn't always happen. I've been working or talking to some people for over a year about a cemetery which seems to have been forgotten. And, you know, this is another thing I do as county historian is try to get some interest in some of these places that have long been forgotten.
Yeah.
And it's tough. I got an email the other day where somebody had lived next to a rural cemetery, and they were moving the stones, and, you know, it's just sad, but you know, after 100 or 150 years go by, nobody visits these places sometimes, and they become abandoned. It's a sad situation, but one of my biggest gripes is why people plant trees in cemeteries, because you know, sometimes the trees take over the gravestones.
Yeah, so, that's true in the booths,
but anyway,
I'm sure.
That's another story.
But I know the Thompson Cemetery, I think the most recent grave in there is marked 1983.
I believe that, yes.
So, I mean,
yeah.
I never see anybody going in there. So,
no,
and those,
I know.
And those stones are
in
such
Jefferson
awful
Heights.
Shape. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
Right.
It's bad.
Well, we've had a lot of involvement with that cemetery in connection with the Civil War. As you know, there's a Civil War monument there, a Civil War soldier.
Right, near the Thompson Street entrance.
Right,
yeah.
And surrounded by that monument are a number of graves of Civil War soldiers. I've been working recently with a friend of mine, Regina Daly, who lives in Catskill.
Yes.
And we would like to get that fountain restored and maybe even working.
Oh,
there
nice.
Is a fountain that stands in front of the Civil War monument there in Thompson Street Cemetery. It's not working. It does not look good. So Regina has been working with the folks in the village. We have some money. We actually have some money to do that. I would like to get it, sandblasted, painted, and maybe even working. It would be really nice.
That would be wonderful.
So Regina is working with the folks from the village to see if she can get that done. So hopefully we'll know more about that in the future.
Oh, great. Before we continue, I'm just going to identify the show here. You're listening to Backtracks in Time, and my guest today is David Dorpfeld, Greene County historian. And so he's been telling us about his work as historian and some events that are going on celebrating the village of Coxsackie's 150th anniversary. Now, I see you have the book over there, Your Legendary Locals.
Right.
Now, a few minutes ago, we were just talking about the Mansion Street Cemetery, and I was asking any notable people in there. Is there anybody in there that, in the Legendary Locals of Greene County book that stands out or that our listeners have
Oh, there's my wife and I. My wife is a co-author, Wanda Dorpfeld. She's a retired teacher, and she's now the justice for the town of Coxsackie. So I don't know if she's going to have any time to write any more books, but it was a joint effort, obviously. So we basically broke it down into seven chapters, and the first one was Founders First and Icons, and that would include people like Charles Beach. That would include people like Thomas Cole and Rip Van Winkle, even though he was legendary.
He wasn't real.
Then chapter two was Educators, Historians, and Writers. And then artists, performers, and sportsmen. And fourth chapter was military, legal, and political leaders, and followed by inventors and entrepreneurs, and then spiritual and medical leaders, and finally crime and punishment. I love crime and punishment. I'm a fan of that show, Forensic Files. I think I watch a different chapter every night. but anyway, we slipped a little bit about, and I think that might be my next book, but because we've had some fascinating cases here in Greene County. But anyway, so it went over well. I think we may have sold about 1,000 copies, and one of the complaints perhaps that we got was you didn't include so and so. You didn't. This person? You know, it's hard. This is somewhat of a formula book. I think it's 128 pages or 128 pages. It's hard to make choices sometimes, and I'm sure we may have overlooked some people that should have been in here. Maybe we should do a volume two.
You're reading my mind. Right. I always tell people that doesn't take much. Doesn't take long to do.
I've been making a list of people that maybe should if we ever do a volume two. But I think we hit a lot of the highlights. We have some very interesting people in here. It's been fun, and we'd like to do another book at some point. I don't know we would do with Arcadia. We may do it with someone else. There's been a number of, this was published by Arcadia Publishing. There's been a number of books about Greene County by them, not necessarily about people, but there's been one done on Catskill. There's one been done on Windham and Hunter. Trying to think if there's any. Oh, and then an overall one by my predecessor, Raymond Beecher, that was called Around Greene County, also by the same publisher. And these are all available at the Bronx Museum if somebody would like to get one.
Wonderful.
I might like to say, if it's okay.
Oh, yeah, keep please.
A little bit about my predecessor. I had some real giants that preceded me. The first was Jessie Van Vechten Vetter.
Mm-hmm.
She was the first historian, municipal historian for Greene County. And she did a number of things. She published some interesting books. But she also is remembered for saving the Leeds Bridge, which the stone bridge there, which the state was going to tear down and put in a metal bridge. Oh, and so they took that all apart and they put it back together, and it looks much like it. A little bit different, but, yeah, but it's close to what it looked like originally. Yeah. So we owe Jessie for that. And she was also the curator at the Bronx Museum for a number of years. And then she was preceded by Mabel Parker Smith, and she was also worked for the local newspaper. She did a regular columns in there. She published, she put out a short book on Greene County history. And she's also remembered for discovering something called the Van Bergen Overmantel, which is an art scene which was found in Leeds, where the Van Bergen family lived. Mm-hmm. It now resides in Cooperstown, but it's one of the, probably the earliest example of Dutch art and Dutch living. If you, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but you can look it up.
Okay, sure.
It's an amazing piece of art because it shows the way the Dutch lived in the early 18th century.
Okay.
So that, and she also got a place in Coxsackie called Flint Mine Hill on the National Register, where the Native Americans mined their flint for weapons and such. So that was a major accomplishment by her. Then she was succeeded by Raymond Beecher, who was sort of my mentor, although he didn't know I was going to be county historian, but he accomplished so much. He, I want to say, first of all, he got the current research library, state-of-the-art research library in Coxsackie, constructed. And I think we're the envy of other counties our size for what we have there. It's a wonderful facility.
And that's the Vetter Library?
Vetter.
Which is right
Vetter
next,
Research.
Just about next to the Bronx House property.
Yes,
yeah.
And I think most of all, the thing he'll always be remembered for, I hope, is saving the coal house.
Right.
Yes. So, yes. You know, Ray used a lot of his money in both respects, both for the library and the coal house. And I think that was probably his greatest achievement.
Definitely.
I don't think there's anything around that big that I can do.
Well, you don't have all $100,000 sitting around there. Come on.
Right, right. Well, yeah, he also contributed greatly through his money. You know, he put up a lot of money for both efforts. He was a wonderful man.
Yes.
He died at 92 and was still county historian. So I feel like I have big shoes to fill, and I hope I'm not disappointing him.
No, so he's very proud.
Right.
The, you know, the work has to continue.
Right.
Can we just briefly touch on other things?
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to ask about the owls, but did you want to
talk about
the owls?
Sure, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Okay, there's various stories about what Coxsackie means. And I don't want to, I've seen some books that have a half a page talking about the meaning of Coxsackie.
Okay.
People think, some people think the Native American word may have been where the owls hoot, where the owls gather. Mm. There's also probably 24 ways that Coxsackie was spelled. So,
oh, yeah.
Without talking to the Mohegans, and I want to point this out, I don't want your listeners to confuse Mohawks with Mohegans. The Mohegans, M-A-C-H-I-A-N-S, they populated this area. The Mohawks were further west on the Mohawk River. Mm-hmm. They did battle with the Mohegans occasionally, not to the Mohegans' benefit, but anyway. Matter of fact, the Mohawks drove them further east, and they ended up in Stockbridge. But that's a whole nother story. Where was I going with this, Jeff?
That happens to me too. My train of thought gets derailed a lot.
Okay.
Yes. The owls.
Oh, the owls.
The meaning
okay.
of the name Coxsackie.
Okay, so we don't really know. Yeah. But we like to think that Coxsackie has some kind of meaning. Hoot of the Owl or Place of the Owls. And so over the years, my wife was one of the first that told me we should do something like this. We looked around and we saw different places were doing, like Catskill was doing cats.
Yeah, that's very obvious.
I think obvious. Carol was doing bears.
Yeah, they were doing bears.
Someplace up the mountain were doing little gnomes or Rip-and-Winkles.
Yeah, I forget which one that was.
And wife said, why aren't we doing owls? And so sure enough, one of our village trustees last year, J.B. Ellis, decided that we're going to do owls. So we have over 50-some owls. Similar to what Catskill is. Mm-hmm. I think Hudson tried something like
dogs.
That. Dogs.
They tried dogs for I don't think it lasted maybe 3 years, like 2008, 2009, 2010,
right.
Somewhere like that.
Yeah. My question to Hudson is, why don't you do whales?
Exactly. Maybe because they thought whales aren't as cute as dogs or cats. Maybe they want a little friendly rivalry. Yeah. Catskill cats and Hudson dogs, just a little. And then I think a year or two later, Catskill tried mixing. They had cats and dogs.
Oh.
And
didn't go
I don't think it went over too well. People said, no, stick with the cats. Right, yeah. Right. But they tried. Well, I guess they were barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah, right. So far, we have some beautiful representations. And I think I have the date here. So we were really blown away that they had over 50 people that bought owls. They were $500 a piece to sponsor. And on September 30th, there will be a gala at Red's Restaurant. It won't actually be at the restaurant, as I understand. They'll have a tent just south of the restaurant where these owls will be auctioned off.
Okay.
So we hope, if the whole thing is a success and we raise enough money, we'll be able to do it next year. Because there has been a lot of expenses. The artist gets a cut. Mm-hmm. They get a cut of whatever the owl is auctioned for. There's just a lot of expenses involved with the whole operation.
Right.
It's not just so we're excited, and we hope that it'll only get better. This was the first year. We had some very interesting owls, but I'm hoping over this year people are going to be thinking about new ideas, like, wow, maybe next year I could do this, or I could try this. We kind of hit them with it kind of quickly. Mm-hmm. And we hope that people will be thinking about ideas for next year. And I think it'll go over well. So this will be similar. Actually, we patterned the thing after what they did in Catskill.
Yes.
It's always good to have a model.
Mm-hmm.
And so our folks reached out to their folks and said, how do you do this whole thing? And
well, this is the 11th year for Catskill's
Cats.
Yeah,
I know.
I remember when they first did it in 2007, I thought, oh, please.
Yeah.
It just sounded too crazy. I thought, oh, they're going to get vandalized. It's going to be a mess.
Right.
And then I saw what happened.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, anytime I drive up that street or walk down, there's always somebody, usually out of town, taking pictures, kids looking at it. So that was the idea.
Yeah.
So it was a good idea.
Yeah, we've had a little bit of that. We had a couple of owls, but it wasn't terrible. I mean, we're learning, okay?
Sure.
We're learning from Catskill, and hopefully you know, it'll work out.
I'm a little biased towards Caskill, so.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, I hope, but you know, they were more than willing to share their ideas and how everything works. So I'm looking forward to September 30th.
Yeah.
We'll have the auction. If anybody's interested in attending that, they can reach out to the Village of Coxsackie.
Okay.
Municipal building there. I don't have the number at hand, but it's in the phone book.
Sure.
They'll give you the details if you want to show up. They'll give you the time. And I think there's a small charge to attend. It's not outrageous. And so that's where we are with that. So,
good, good.
So, yeah, it's a good event, Jack.
All right. And again, you are listening to Backtracks in Time. And my guest today is David Dorpfeld, Green County historian. And a major event that's going on this year is the 150th anniversary of the Village of Coxsackie. And I think David has some more points of interest about the history of Coxsackie. So.
Well, thank you. Yes, Jack, this year, like I said, we're celebrating the 150th anniversary. Just to talk a little bit about Coxsackie, I was telling Jack that it's been spelled many different ways over the years, but in 1718, Coxsackie was part of Albany County and was set off as a separate district for representation. And then over time, the area became very attractive for shipping. We had the Greenville Turnpike that went out to western New York that's terminated in Coxsackie. And the area by the river just continued to grow and grow. So in 1867, the New York State Legislature said, okay, you've grown large enough to be a village. It was set off with 610 acres. At that time, there were about 200 houses in Coxsackie. The population was 1,341 persons. You know, that's about half what we have now. So you can see it was growing fast at one time, but slowed down a bit over the years. There were already some businesses there. The National Bank of Coxsackie was there at the founding in 1852. So that was already 15 years old. We had a fire company and a newspaper at that time. So Coxsackie was on the move even when it became a village. One of the things that was made Coxsackie important, they found a very nice vein of clay there, and because it became a brickmaking center for many years in the 19th century. One source estimated that 50 million tons of brick were made in Coxsackie during the 1800s. Wow. You can still see signs on a couple of the streets where they gouged out the hills to pull that clay out to make those bricks. So also another thing which was important in the early years was ice making. New York City was highly dependent upon the ice which was harvested in the Hudson. And estimates were that we had 16 ice houses at one time with 400,000 tons of capacity. I can't even realize what or imagine how much that is, but it was a lot. So that was sent down. One source indicated that during the ice season, that Coxsackie was the wildest town on the river, because all these people came in there to make a few bucks. During the we had seven bars. We had we even had a jail, which we obviously needed.
Yeah,
we
don't it was heavily used.
Yeah, we don't have one now, but we had one back then. So those are the kinds of things that made Coxsackie great back in those days. And of course, the train was important. Mm-hmm. The turnpike, which ended in Coxsackie, people drove livestock down what we call Mansion Street to the landing to ship them to the city. So there was a lot going on there. And I mentioned earlier that we had seven churches in Coxsackie, and they all They all still exist, believe it or not. And they were open for an open house. Our fire companies are still very vital. The thing that has changed in the village over time, we had quite a bit of industry, and we essentially have none now. We've become a bedroom community, and what commercial activity there is has moved out to the town, which is on the Route 9W corridor.
Yeah.
So if you come up 9W, you'll see a lot of businesses out there, which were formerly, some of that activity was in the village. We had foundries, we had brick making, we had many businesses. Oh, one of the most famous was Knaus Mushroom, the biggest mushroom business in the 50s in the world. So all those businesses are either gone or moved elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a lovely little place to live. We have a great school, a beautiful campus, we think it's a nice place to settle down.
It is. And the Riverside Park is beautiful down by the river.
Yeah, we have some nice parks.
I visit my cousin Lynn every Sunday. Right. I go up there and have dinner and stuff. And then during the summer months, we would go down to the park, get dessert or something over at Tops, and then go down to the park, sit on the docks or something.
Right.
And eat. So I love it down there.
The other thing I'd like to mention along those lines is an individual who's done so much for Coxsackie, and his name is Aaron Forey. Now, Aaron Flack.
Okay.
Aaron Flack has bought the old Mansion Street School, which has not been used since the 60s. He's turned that into upscale apartments. He bought what we called the Eagle Hotel, was formerly a dressmaking factory, had fallen into disrepair. He's also turned that into high-end apartments. And he bought the two buildings next to the library, which he's also rehabilitating them. He has done so. He's almost like our savior in Coxsackie. He bought the old True Value Hardware, which was at one time an auto dealership. He's torn that down.
Mm-hmm.
Almost any place you look in Coxsackie where there was disrepair and dilapidated properties, Aaron Flack has stepped in and improved them. So I want to give him a shout out. And by the way, he is in our book as well. So
good.
So I hope that isn't too much of a commercial.
No.
Yeah.
I like listening to all the names, because Flack, I think Flack Real Estate.
Flack Real Estate. That's Aaron. Yes.
Okay. Oh, there's. Okay. Well, there you
go. Right.
And then even earlier, talking about the, I think Dr. Ely.
Dr. Ely
Street.
Yes.
Mentioned Reed.
Exactly.
Reed Street. Yeah.
Reed Street, yeah. Right. So, it's always nice when you have a benefactor. I mean, I realize he's a businessman, but he's made our community look so much better.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, I wanted to mention that. And recently, he just bought what we call the Dolan Block, which is a big building down at the end of Reed Street, which was once where the Opera House was, and they had a movie theater there.
I think I know which block you mean.
Also begging for something, and apparently, I don't know what he's going to do with that, but I'm sure he'll do something good. So we're very grateful for all this, and it makes us makes our community a much nicer place.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. So, is there any final thoughts?
I just want to, I've enjoyed my, I had an accounting background.
Oh.
I worked for the federal government, the state government. I held some pretty good positions with them. But this, I really enjoy being county historian, and as somebody once said, it's the best job I never had. I'm going to continue to do this for a while. It's a lot of fun. I always had a love of history, and you know how sometimes your life takes certain turns, and all of a sudden you're doing one thing, and you say, why? Why didn't I do history? Because I love it. And this has given me an opportunity to do that.
Good.
So,
and hopefully with that local history curriculum, maybe some kids, some of those you know, right. nine-year-olds right now might think of something like this in the future.
I'm trying to encourage my grandchildren, but my oldest grandchild is in college right now, and she's pursuing accounting. So I failed on that one. But I got four more to go. So
well, there you go. I didn't follow my dad into his field. He was a forester, so I'm more have the accounting background. I've done a lot of bookkeeping. So yeah.
All right.
And now I'm going to ask again. It has nothing to do with local historian. Your relation to Albert?
Oh, he's a first cousin once removed.
Oh, okay. The reason I bring this up, every time I would see Dave's name in the paper, I would think, I went to school with an Albert Dorpfeld, and I had to ask if there was a relation. So,
right.
And in this area, somebody is either related or knows somebody. Yeah, there's always these little connections, and I love it.
Father,
you have to watch what you say, too.
His father and I are first cousins.
Okay.
So, and his father and I share a grandfather, so gotcha. That's how it works.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, throw that in there.
Albert's a good guy.
Yes, yes, he is. So, all right. Well, thank you, David. You have been listening to Backtracks in Time. My guest today was David Dorpfeld, Greene County historian, and I'd like to invite you to join us for the next edition of Backtracks in Time on Tuesday, October 24th at 2 p.m., here on WGXC 90.7 FM. And we'll have a couple of musical selections here to fill out, to take a break between shows. The songs you will be hearing are Pontoon by Little Big Town, Proud Mary by Creedence Clearwater Revival, and Michael Row the Boat Ashore by The Highwaymen. Enjoy. So thank you for joining us and have a great day.
Back this hitch out into the water on the pond. trim the sails.
Hallelujah.
Sister, help to trim the sails.